This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. One of the cruel abuses of slavery was that slaves were forbidden to read and write. But as Trinity College Associate Professor of English and American Studies Christopher Hager reveals in his latest book, Word by Word, Emancipation and the Act of Writing, some enslaved African Americans did learn to read and write, and during the early years of emancipation, thousands more became literate. Word by Word reveals many of the writings from these individuals, letters and diaries by enslaved and newly emancipated African Americans and freedmen. And Christopher Hager joins us this afternoon, along with National Underground Freedom Center Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller. And Christopher and Chris, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you, Mark.
You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Christopher, what got you interested in writing about the literacy of African Americans during the Civil War era?
Well, I studied literature as a college student and as a graduate student, and that was my area of expertise. What led me into studying the writings by people we wouldn't think of as authors in the way that we think of a famous novelist or poet as an author, I can really trace to one day. I was in a library and I opened up a book. I was trying to find something about the Civil War, and I looked in a book and I saw this document that had been written by a former slave in New Orleans, Louisiana, and it was unusual. It was perfectly verbatim quotations from the U.S. Constitution and then commentaries of his own on what he was seeing around him in 1863, and his own sentences were hard to follow, the words were misspelled, and as someone who had a PhD in literature, I really felt bothered by the fact that here was a text that I didn't really know how to make sense of. I'd never seen anything like it. I didn't imagine that there could be things like that, and so I just started looking for more, looking for, were there other examples of things that enslaved people, people who had just become free from slavery, had written, even if they weren't very literate. And as I did that, I found that in some ways, although these people aren't people we would call good writers in the way that you might say Ernest Hemingway or Emily Dickinson was a good writer, but the very unusual quality of the way they were trying to express themselves made what they wrote uniquely revealing.
Now, the particular slave you're talking about, I think he's identified only as a colored man. Is that correct?
That's right. We don't know anything about him. He didn't sign his name to this document that he wrote.
But he's writing the Constitution. He also makes some interesting observations, doesn't he? I think he made one about comparing the Union forces that were occupying the part of Louisiana he lived in with the plantation owners, and how they were really being treated equally as bad by both sides.
He was a really sharp observer of what was going on around him, and what was going on around him was pretty tumultuous, you could even say chaotic. New Orleans in 1863 was, of course, it had been the largest city in the Confederacy, but now it was controlled by the Union. And it was really unclear what the status of African Americans here was. The Emancipation Proclamation had come out, but it also didn't apply to this part of Louisiana. And many people like this man really weren't sure whether they were free and what was going to happen. And I think, you know, you're right to point out, he really was a keen observer of what were some of the hypocrisies of the Union war effort in the federal government, and what were some of the problems facing African Americans even after the Union Army had arrived here. And I think one of the things that made this document so compelling to me is precisely the fact that someone who barely knew how to write nevertheless was obviously a very intelligent analyst of the social and political situation around him.
Yeah, and he is one of the writers who turns around on the other hand. I think one of the sentences from him in your book is he says, "I am sorry that I'm not able to write good. So, you know, you're right. He has these great observations, but he also has this this humbleness about him at the same time.
It was, I think, one of the things that I found. It was a, it could be a very stressful, a nerve-wracking situation to be, let's say, a newly emancipated African American in the South during the Civil War, and becoming free meant you had this wonderful opportunity finally to get a little bit of education, and it meant that you could perhaps write a letter expressing your point of view, maybe even to somebody in power. A lot of freedmen and freedwomen wrote letters to Union Army generals. They wrote to President Lincoln, trying to make their case for what they thought should happen. But to be someone who never had a formal education and maybe had only learned how to write by scrabbling together a few lessons from friends, maybe in secret or in a sort of a ramshackle schoolhouse, you had to try to put yourself forward, and you knew that people were going to read what you wrote and they might judge you for it. And that can be stressful for an individual, but for some of these people, they could feel as though the whole race was going to be judged for it, and the future of African Americans was in some ways riding on their shoulders. Could they show themselves in writing to be the intelligent people that they were, ready for citizenship, ready for voting rights?
I would say to continue what you're saying there is that the act of writing has always been a source of empowerment and emancipation. If you can go back as early as to the David Walker's appeal that was written in the 1829, that was a document, a pamphlet that actually confronted the Declaration of Independence, and as well as Thomas Jefferson. And so what Christopher expresses is part of this continuum of the act of writing, of bringing about emancipation, but more importantly, empowerment, in providing a voice to those who are considered voiceless in this process, and also shedding light on topics that we don't address today. We don't often talk about the role of the Union soldiers and how some of them had acts that weren't friendly towards those who were enslaved, the very people that they were supposedly fighting for, you know, as far as many different accounts, horrible accounts as towards enslaved people.
Chris, does the Freedom Center have samples of some of these texts on display?
Some of the things that you can find with technology nowadays, there's many, there's a database that you can Google and find. It is often a practice by many people who were enslaved that had the ability to read and write, that they would often write their very own story, you know, from Frederick Douglass to Reverend Jermaine Wesley Logan, who was titled the King of the Underground Railroad. He wrote, you know, his own autobiography. And so there are countless. The one that stands out to me is actually related to the region, is by Jacob D. Green, who was an enslaved man that escaped Kentucky three times. It took three opportunities to escape. But he is, like many of the people featured in Christopher's book, he is a common person just telling his story, but it speaks to the environment and also his surroundings during that time period.
Christopher, why do you think it's important to understand this aspect of history?
Well, oh, Christopher.
Or either one of you, that's fine.
You know, I'll say two things about it. I mean, to me, there are two important issues here. There's understanding slavery and there's understanding writing, how we express ourselves in writing, any of us. I think that to the extent that we value freedom, we can never understand slavery well enough, because it's through the experiences of people who were denied freedom that we can understand the deepest meanings of freedom. And part of what I wanted to do in this book was try to see beyond the relatively small number of enslaved people who have given us most of the firsthand accounts that we have of that experience. Many of us now have thankfully read Frederick Douglass's autobiography that Chris mentioned, and others, but it's really a tiny sliver of people who have written the things that most of us know, and so I wanted to see a somewhat broader view. It's also, I think, important to me to understand how writing specifically was a part of that experience, because writing remains essential to our daily lives. In some ways, it's even more essential to our daily lives today than it was 30 years ago, because now we send email every day, and we send text messages every day, and we use our voices a little bit less even than people did a generation or two ago, and are writing more just to communicate with people. And I think understanding how a community of people undergoing one of the most profound transitions in their own lives and in American history, how did a new medium of communicating, writing with pen and paper, how did that shape the way that they saw themselves and saw the people around them and related to the people around them?
Chris, did you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I was going to say that also reflects how we take for granted our ability to communicate in that fashion, and how during this time period you have a oppressed group of people who were struggling just to have the ability to write, to communicate, and how impactful that is for their lives. And so I think it's an opportunity for us to reflect back and understand how important that is, and how words are powerful, how expressing your story is powerful. And so regardless of who you are, whether if you're someone of great prominence or if you're someone who is lesser known, I think everyone has a powerful story within them. And then what Christopher does is he brings to light these individuals that you often will not find in a history book, African-American history book or American history book.
Christopher, Chris, you know, points out this is an oppressed group of people. How in the world did they pull off learning to read and write? I mean, there must have been some peril in this.
Yeah, you know, to a frustrating extent, we don't know, because by necessity, people who were enslaved and learned to read and write had to do it secretly most of the time. There are instances in which Southern slave owners might have willingly allowed or tolerated people they enslaved to learn to read and write. Sometimes you had very devoted Christian slave owners, sounds paradoxical, but it was the case, who thought it was fine for enslaved people to learn to read and write. But most of the time, it was not perceived as fine at all. And so the ways that they learned are hard for us to recover, because they weren't something that one would let on or talk about. We do know from some autobiographies that people wrote, reflecting back on their time in slavery, how they learned to read and write. And usually it involved help from a friend. A Virginia enslaved man named Don Washington learned to write from his uncle, who was a wallpaper hanger in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and he took a scrap piece of wallpaper and spelled out copy letters on the back of it so that John could copy them and learn how to make his letters. Others describe a variety of stratagems to do it, many of them having to find cast-off pieces of paper and even make their own ink by boiling walnut bark, so that they could practice, even though they didn't have access to writing materials, and they might practice in a variety of ways. One of the most famous examples, which is Frederick Douglass's, is that when he was living with a white family in Baltimore, the white boy in the house got to go to school, and after he finished his school books, his copy books, they would be left around the house, and if Frederick Douglass had some time alone, he would take them and he would do the writing exercises in the books that the white boy of the house had done. And so there were a lot of ways in which enslaved African Americans, particularly if they lived in urban areas where you had a little bit more access to sort of the edges of white society's educational processes, could kind of get a sidelong glance in at how white children learned to write and try to imitate that.
I would say it's also important to note that illiteracy was actually rampant during that time period. The opportunity to learn how to read and write quite often was for those of privilege, There was a vast majority of those who were not enslaved also didn't have full command of knowing how to read and write as well. And so that even furthers the challenge, heightens the ability for people who are in a position of being placed in a condition of slavery, of learning how to read and write. They would have to be in contact with someone that would have that particular privilege. And then like with Frederick Douglass, he used some trickery and so forth as far as to learn how to read and write. There are several narratives that speak to that episode as far as the learning. One that I recall is the slaveholder's child wanted to play schoolmaster to a group of children. His father allowed him to do it because he felt that it wouldn't last that long. But there was one individual, Edward Walker is his name, and he actually gravitated towards arithmetic, as he would call it, math. But he obtained his freedom and actually became a very wealthy man in Windsor, Canada, after obtaining his freedom.
I'm talking with Christopher Hager. His book is Word by Word, Emancipation and the Act of Writing. And also we're joined today by the National Underground Freedom Center Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Christopher, can you talk about one of the other texts that were cited in your book, perhaps one that really stood out to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can mention this man John M. Washington at Fredericksburg, Virginia, and he wrote several things over the course of his life, and that's one of the things that was really remarkable about him. He wrote an autobiography after he was free. In 1873, he was living in Washington, D.C., and he wrote sort of his memoir, and it was unknown until not very long ago. It turned up about 7 or 8 years ago, and David Blythe, who's a historian from Yale, was asked to authenticate it, and he published a book version of it, which is how I learned about it. But in going into the archives to see what else of John Washington's papers were preserved, I found that not only had he written this autobiography about a decade after he escaped from slavery, he had actually been keeping a diary while he was enslaved. And this is quite remarkable. I only know of two examples that exist today of diaries that people kept while they were enslaved. Many enslaved people, if they were able to write, the most important thing they wanted to do was send letters to loved ones. They may have been separated from their spouse or their parents or children when they were sold away in the slave trade. And so writing letters was one of the most common uses of literacy. John Washington actually kept a diary. It's unknown whether this exposed him to any great risk, whether the person who enslaved him knew about this or not. And when I first saw I found the diary, and I was sort of astonished. And I thought, I guess kind of naively, that I would read these diary entries about his reflections on what it was like to be enslaved. I was initially kind of disappointed, I guess, because it was not about that at all. It was actually about his courtship of a girl and the ups and downs of trying to figure out whether she liked him or not. It was a typical teenage boy's diary. He was a late adolescent at the time. And I spent a long time trying to figure out why that might have been, and there's no way I can know for sure, but one of the things that I found important about that it was a good reminder to me, is that for someone like John Washington, his purposes in using literacy may not be what the historian's desire is. It may not be to say, what was it like to be a slave, or what did he think about freedom? It may have been to think through and work through his feelings about the things that mattered in his daily life. And the woman he was dating, he did end up marrying after he escaped. Very interestingly, Washington actually took his diary, and at a later stage, he started turning it into something that looks like a like it was trying to be an autobiography or even a novel. He wrote chapter titles at the tops of pages and narrated it in the third person, talking about himself falling in love with Annie, as if he was telling a story of his life that would culminate in their marriage.
But I think that's powerful to have that story, because you have a system like slavery who deems that you are a piece of property, that you're less than human. And but yet you have these stories that embrace, with regardless of where you come from, a teenage boy can relate to having a crush or fond of some girl. And so that's the human side of it that's exposed through that story. And you, matter of fact, there are several I've been privileged to come across several narratives where you see relationships, stories about relationships come involved. Henry Bibb in his narrative talks about the relationship between him and his wife and so forth, and all the different aspects and nuances dealing with that. And even when I referenced Jacob D. Green, he wrote about stealing his master's horse to go to a shindy, which is a dance. And this is in his narrative. So you find those human elements, and I think they're very rich. I think they're very powerful, because it reminds us that these individuals, they were human beings just
Absolutely.
Like us.
Absolutely. Chris, tell us about the upcoming lecture series that Christopher is going to be part of.
Yes, the John and Francie Pepper lecture series. We have four installments, and Christopher Hager is actually a part of our third installment. That will be taking place tomorrow at 6 p.m. We will have a reception followed by him addressing the attendees as far as to talk about his wonderful work, talk about emancipation and the act of writing. And then those in attendance will have an opportunity to ask him questions and to explore further into his writings and what he's revealing in his book. And then we also will have the book available for purchase. And it's a great opportunity if you can purchase a book and get it signed. That's absolutely outstanding. So we definitely want to invite the public to come out for this installment just be a part, to be enlightened about this subject matter that is quite often not talked about too much when we talk about it in the context of history.
And you can find a link to more information about that, and as well as a link to the Freedom Center at WVXU.org. And Christopher, is there a message to us today from the writings that you revealed in this book?
You know, I think Chris actually just touched on this a little bit, and that is that when we look to the past in seeking to understand history, often what we think is important may not have been what was driving people on a day-to-day basis. As I studied the history of slavery earlier in my life, I tended to find that everything was focused on individuals. It was on individuals seeking to escape, trying to find a path to opportunity in their lives. And what I found as I looked at these writings is that a sense of family and a sense of community was far more prominent than what I had studied had led me to believe, and that the connections among people are just as important as the individual perspectives in making up history.
Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Christopher and Chris.
Thank you.
Trinity College Associate Professor of English and American Studies, Christopher Hager. His book is Word by Word, Emancipation and the Act of Writing. Also, National Underground Freedom Center Manager of Program Initiatives, Chris Miller.